Hi, everyone. I'm Eleanor, and you're listening to Sweet Deviation, the podcast designed to help you navigate, organize, and get creative while living with ADD. In each episode, I'll share personal stories, tricks, and insights that I've used to break through daily challenges. And together, we will lean into the diagnosis and stop fighting our natural tendencies. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 7. Number 7 reminded me that this would be a good time to talk to you about the 7 types of ADD, according to Dr. Amen, I'm not sure how you pronounce that. But it was one of the first books that I came across after my diagnosis, and I wanted to dig in like I do and learn a little bit more about what I was up against. And what I learned in the book was that there are 7, according to him, 7 types of ADD. I believe that you can have more than a type, but these are basically some of the things that they kind of categorize them into. There's the classic ADD that has primary symptoms are inattentiveness, distractibility, disorganization, impulsivity. And then if you throw in the H, like ADHD, then you include hyperactivity as well. And that's primarily seen, you know, typically we think of ADHD as that, you know, second grader who won't sit in his grade. At least that's what I always thought. I just never really even considered ADD for myself because I had gone through school and I had done fine. I graduated. I was, you know, I was a good student, actually, surprisingly, or I had really good vision and I could see what my smart neighbors were doing. Honestly, I don't remember, but I made it. So ADD never really applied to me. ADHD absolutely did not apply to me as far as I was concerned. Now, the second type is inattentive ADD, and that he describes that as low activity in the prefrontal cortex that creates low dopamine levels, and the symptoms are short attention span, distractibility, disorganization, and procrastination. So now that one, I think like, okay, maybe. So I continue to read on, and the third kind is over-focused. Over-focused has all of the core ADD symptoms, plus a great trouble shifting attention. People with overfocused type ADD get stuck or locked into a negative thought pattern or behavior, and there is a deficiency in serotonin or dopamine in the brain, according to Dr. Amen. So now, again, this one I thought like, yes, I do get stuck into negative thought patterns, and I know that there have been times when I've decided to do something. I was teaching myself how to work Excel and working on a program for knitting, and I did not sleep for, I mean, like 36 hours straight. I was so hyper focused, and I did not want anybody or anything to bother me because I was so glued to that task. And eventually I did finish it, and that's a whole other story because that created a number of interesting situations. But back to number 4, the temporal lobe is involved with memory, learning, mood stability, and visual processing of objects. People with this type of learning have memory and behavioral problems such as quick to anger, aggression, and mild paranoia. So I don't have a lot of trouble learning things. I can learn things rather quickly, and I've never had a problem with behavior problems. That's not been my jam. And I don't actually like anger. It makes me uncomfortable. I'm direct, but not aggressive. At least that's what I'm told. So the temporary lobe one, I thought like, well, I do have a problem with memory. We talked about how I couldn't remember how to get to my grandmother's house. So I'm trying to figure out where I fit into all of this before I had spoken to my doctor about it. The number 5 type is limbic. And I really think that after I spoke to my doctor, this seemed to make the most sense for me. I would have loved to have had more time with the counselor to see if she could kind of assess this and confirm. But I believe that this seems to be the most pronounced form of ADD for myself. I have chronic low-level sadness. Now, you know, there's just like a sadness about it. And because you try to fight it, you become exuberant. So and it looks like, you know, like you're just moody. And it was just me really trying to fight the sadness around me. And I've never really determined whether or not the sadness was due to, you know, it's a whole nature-nurture thing. Was it the nature? Is that just how I was born? Or was I sad because of my surroundings and some of the tough situations that I have found myself in? And now that I'm in a really healthy and happy relationship, living my best life, having my own business, I don't have to deal with Monday morning blues when you got to get up and go to a job you hate. I tend to think that I don't have the level of sadness that I had in the past. So the reason I cling to this limbic idea is because I feel like there has been a real improvement when I started treating for it. So I started taking Strattera. That was a prescription that my doctor gave me. And it was at first a very, she just said, try it and see what happens. And I felt that it did help me to have a little bit of space between an event and then my response to it, because I have a tendency to kind of filter things negatively toward myself, never toward anyone else, but I just take on a lot of guilt. And so I noticed that once I started taking that, it helped. And according to this doctor, I mean, he gives a huge, I'm going to put a link to the, in the show notes, where to find Dr. Again, I don't know if it's Amen. He's got a great book, and I found that some of the supplements that he recommended for this particular type, when I started taking them, I'm telling you, it was night and day. I am just thrilled that I found this book. Okay, onward. Number six is Ring of Fire, and he describes this as hypersensitivity to your environment. So especially noise, light, touch. And there's periods of oppositional behavior, unpredictable moods, talking fast, which I do, worrying and obsessiveness, also which I do. So again, you might just take little bits of information as he describes these more pronounced kinds. You might find that there is one that's more pronounced for you. Now that I'm reading it out loud, I'm thinking I need to go revisit it because they all sound like me. And lastly, number seven, he adds anxious ADD. Now, this wasn't in his original text. He added this later, and it might just be the state that we're living in now, that we're just more anxious. But he describes this as anxious, tense, and having physical stress symptoms like headaches and stomach aches. We tend to predict the worst and freeze in anxiety-provoking situations where we think that we may be judged. So this one, for me, is interesting. I have absolutely no problem at all speaking in public. That's something that I know people talk about, like that just is, oh, it's just so anxiety causing for most people. And I've never had a problem with it. And I think I discovered when I was in college debating that it was not me. I could debate a thing. And that was true when I was in broadcasting as well. I could say something, report on something, read a teleprompter. It wasn't me. So it got to be something outside of me. So I didn't feel people were judging me personally. Then years later, when I started participating in Toastmasters, I found that I loved writing. I could write a great award-winning speech on the way to the competition, and did, in fact, do that several times. So I had a humorous speech that I wrote in between, you know, red lights. I was just jotting things down. I was running late. And when I got there, I just kind of, you know, shot from the hip, and it was a hit. And I remember thinking, like, this is great because it's a story. It has nothing to do with me personally. So if people don't like it, well, that's, they didn't get the sense of humor, but it wasn't personal. And this podcast here is very personal. You know, this is very much a pretty clear view of where I am with all my flaws. So I can already tell you that the fact that I'm sitting here doing this now shows that there has been improvement with that. Now, what I don't have in performance anxiety, I don't have there, I have in post. So I suffer still from post-social anxiety. And this is a term that I coined myself. I haven't read a book about it. I wish that I can find a book about it. But I noticed that after I opened my shop, I could teach a class and be fine, and I could have huge rave reviews. People love it, can't wait to come back. They were booking the next class before they even left the shop. And I would have a high that lasted, you know, maybe 3 or 4 hours. And then at about 3 o'clock, I would think of all the things that I said or forgot to say, or did I offend this person? You know, did I use a bad example? And I would just start to relive the event and really frame it in a light that was negative. And I carried that stress. Like, I can't describe it. And it got worse as I got older, I think. I don't remember it being so bad when I was young. Maybe you have a little bit of give a damn when you're young, but I don't know now. It just really was starting to rest heavy on me. And it might also have been because it was my business. I wasn't working for someone else. This was everything me. If they didn't like it, it was my creation. It was my vision. It was my my work. So I noticed that I started having a lot of that post-social anxiety. So I'm trying to work my way through it now. I mention it not because the doctor includes it in his seven. He doesn't say anything about that. But when I saw the anxious ADD that he recently added, I felt like maybe that resonates a little bit in it presents itself for me with that post-social anxiety. Okay, so now that we've talked about these labels, and you might find that one resonates more with you, or you might think that you should go and investigate this some more. And if you do feel you should, absolutely do find Dr. Amen. He's got some good information online and has put out some pretty good books. The classic, I'm going to review them again. Classic, inattentive, overfocused, temporal lobe, limbic, ring of fire, and anxious. Those are the labels. So now that brings me to this idea of labels. So if you're like me, when you hear the word attention deficit disorder, you instantly hear a negative, it's got a negative connotation. It's not uncommon for people to make fun of somebody who just is rambling to say, oh my gosh, get a hold of your ADD, even if they don't have a diagnosis. It's almost, you know, it's socially acceptable as a joke to, you know, get a grip. And I recently heard that there were some, I guess, broadcasters in Australia making fun of somebody. I think he was a soccer player, but I could be wrong. And they were on a live mic. They were not aware. And the broadcasters are making fun of this star athlete because he does. Oh, it might have been. It's not baseball they play. What do they play there? Cricket? Am I making that up? Anyway, I'm not a sports person, y'all. They're making fun of this person, and it happened to go live, and they got a lot of flack for that. So I was glad to see that people were speaking up in defense of this sports player and saying that it's not okay. You know, it's not a joke. It's something that he's working through and has been vocal about it because he's trying to make a difference in his circle of influence. So I was glad to see that at least on some level, people are being held accountable, that it's not something we should make fun of. I mean, it's just not. So I encourage you all to take that stance, but it's not without cause, right? The term alone, attention deficit disorder, it is kind of harsh. So I wanted to look at this, though the label has generally meant that there's poor concentration or impulsivity. We accept that as a term. I wanted to break it down a little bit further because I don't want to carry that. I don't like it. Not that I'm going to change the world, but if I can decide for myself, I will. The attention part, obviously, is the mental faculty of considering or taking notice of something or someone. These are all just definitions I just pulled out. Deficit is the amount by which something is too small. So in this case, our attention is too small. But the worst of it is this word disorder, which I don't love, and it is a state of confusion. So when you put those all together, the term ADD generally evokes a very negative feeling and has negative attributes that we've kind of come to adopt with those behaviors. And we make broad strokes about this term ADD. So I want you to consider that whenever you use the term, like how has that affected you? Because whether or not you were diagnosed as a child or if you're just like me, recently diagnosed and just coming to terms with what this means, the truth of the matter is you've had it. It didn't happen overnight. So you might be suffering from wounds from when you were a child, whether or not you were diagnosed then and people didn't understand it or made fun of it. Or like me, you didn't realize you had it. So I wanted to share this quick story because I've tried so hard to adapt. I didn't know what it was, but I knew that I talk too fast. My dad made it clear that, I mean, he couldn't hardly stand to talk to me still. We have conversations over the phone that are very uncomfortable because I have to try to slow my speech and it sounds unauthentic and it's a lot of work. And the older he gets, the worse his hearing gets. So that makes it that much more complicated. But when I was young, I was just excited. I was happy to do things with my friends. And I was so lucky that I had friends that accepted that in me. I was a cheerleader, gosh, starting from the fifth grade up till college, and was a good cheerleader. I really put my mind to it. I cheered at the Aloha Bowl in 1986 and had really just loved the excitement surrounding that. Honestly, I didn't do it for football. I liked basketball, but I did the cheerleading for myself because I really loved the gymnastics. I loved the being tossed up in the air. All of that was my jam because I was excitable and it gave me a chance to jump up and down. And people thought that I was a good athlete and not necessarily, you know, hyperactive. So that's how the ADD might have shown up for me when I was in high school and college. Now, I had not realized just how I was perceived outside of myself. When I was young, I was, like I'd mentioned, I was the youngest of my siblings. I was quiet. I was sickly. And I was really, really skinny and really, really dark. So I got teased a lot about that. And I remember feeling that I should be ashamed of those things. And I remember being quiet, but evidently not. Years after my mom had left, she resurfaced when I was already grown and had my own two children, and eventually was rather sick. She was diagnosed with lung cancer. So toward the end of her life, having really not had a relationship with her since I was 10, 11 maybe, I decided at that point we had an opportunity to move our family back to my hometown. My first husband's job had a transfer, and that just happened to be one of the options. So we thought it was kind of serendipitous that I would get to go home. And my mother had, you know, she had been gone for a long time, but she returned to our hometown once she was diagnosed with cancer. So we bought a house just a few blocks down from my mom, and I spent the last 2 years of her life trying hard to get to know her and trying hard to, I guess, find my own space in her life, figure out, you know, how I could reconcile the lost years. And I was really curious to see what kind of a mother she would be to me now, because there is a void still. I don't know how to be a mother to children over the age of 10. So I had really wanted to get to have this picture of a relationship with my mother. So after two very, very difficult years of watching her really just fight for her life and finally succumb to cancer, it was a really difficult time. I had really not wanted to be in my hometown anymore. And truly, when we were ready to go to the funeral, I thought, you know, this is a good ending here. You know, we were able to come together, my sisters and I. We had a beautiful end-of-life experience with my mom. I really think she was at peace when she left. And the night of the rosary, my sister and I had sang one of the songs my mom had written. It's a wonderful song. And when my mom was young, I remember my young years, everybody would say, you know, they would, you know, scream for my mom to pull out the guitar and sing. She was always kind of the crowd pleaser. And so when my sister and I decided, or she asked me if I would sing with her at my mom's rosary, I thought, yeah, that sounds great. I was in a really great mood. I had my kids with me. I felt like my mom was at peace. We really, truly, when I tell you we had a beautiful transition with her, we did. She died on her birthday, and it was a real celebration of her life. So at this point, at the rosary, I have my first husband and my two young kids with me, and I'm making my way around to, you know, thank people for coming out. And I came across my cousin, who I have not seen and don't hardly remember, because I probably was maybe 8 or 9 the last time I saw him. So now I'm an adult, and I approach him, and in front of my children, he says, "Oh my God, your mom was so annoying." And I remember that, how hard that stung, because I thought, how do you even remember that I was? This is the opinion that you have of me. I was kind of curious to see how he came to that. So I just let it kind of hang in the air. And then in the silence, he took it as a cue to continue. So he started to talk about how annoying I was when I was young and nobody really liked to be around me. And I was just in disbelief that not only had I just buried my mother and had the grief of that, despite how we were celebrating, it was still a very difficult time. He's going to say this insulting thing to me While her body lays just in that very room in front of my two young children, I was at a loss for words, and that very rarely happens. So I thought, I'm just going to gather my kids and move on. I just didn't defend myself. And for years, it haunted me. I carried how mad I was. And every once in a while, for no reason at all, while I was washing dishes, the thought of this guy saying that really, really, really pissed me off. So years later, in part of my healing, I thought, you know, everyone's on Facebook now. So I thought, I'm going to find him on Facebook and I'm going to just shoot him a Facebook message. And I did. And he did not remember. I told him, I said, you know, that was a really hard thing. At the worst time, the lowest part of my life, that you found that that would be the thing that you would say to me in front of my children was offensive. And he apologized about it and had no recollection of it at all. But I realized that I had let him take up this space in my head for all of those years because I kept trying to figure out what about me was so damned annoying that that's the thing that he held on to. And so I'm sharing that with you because that wound, I played it over and over in my head. And honestly, I still don't know and I still haven't asked him and honestly don't care what he thought was so annoying. What I found later was he never did call after my parents left. He wasn't the cousin who came around to check on me to see how I was doing then. So his opinions just don't matter. And though he did respond kindly at that point, I was able to kind of let go of his opinion mattering at all. But the fact that I had had that wound allowed me to replay this whole tape in my head about how people must not have liked me when I was young. So I started to rephrase, and now I'm sitting with it thinking, I'm going to rephrase. It might have been the ADD at the time that I wasn't aware of, that wasn't, you know, I wasn't being treated for, that caused him to feel this way. It might have been that I cried a lot, because God knows I did. I was a sad, sad little girl. It might have been that there were times when I was excited, super excited. Who knows? I just don't know. But I decided to change my mind about that space and time and change that wound and look at it now with these eyes and learn from it. I see it more as a shortcoming for him because I want to rephrase the attention deficit disorder, that those letters, ADD, and instead take away that little dot, and what you're left with is add. So I feel like we add energy, we add excitement, we add creativity, we add fresh perspectives, and we should honor that. You know, if he was somebody who couldn't see that in me, then that's 100% on him. But I own it today that I do add value. And my personality is just what it is. And I'm totally thrilled with it. I recently heard a different term for ADD that I really loved. Somebody was talking about ADD and referred to it as neurodiversity. And I thought, yes, there you go. Now that's a label I can get behind. We are diverse. We're all going to have our own quirks and we have our own positive attitudes. So if you're someone who struggles with the term ADD, consider taking off those little dots and remind yourself that you add value. And I hope that this podcast today has added value for you. And I encourage you to go to the show notes and find Dr. Amen's link if you're curious about learning more of the seven types. I tell you that the best thing we can do is learn more about the position that we're in so that we can get the help that we need to get past it and really understand it. So I've gone a little long today, but I think it was time well spent, and I hope that you find the same, and I also hope that you find time for some sweet deviations. Thanks for listening.